Welcome to Day Zero Update for July 2nd, 2023. I'm your host, Chris Elogi.
I'm Brandon Parkin.
I'm Felipe Donolfo.
And I'm Janet Victorio.
Yeah, we got a full crew this week with a bunch of stuff to talk about.
Been a kind of a busy week for gaming, I have to admit.
Yeah, we've had a bunch of news, a bunch of layoffs, some weird stuff happening with CD Projekt Red trying to gaslight everybody. We got some releases coming, some from the Annapurna Interactive Showcase, some neat stuff in there, as well as some dates and such. The game got simultaneously moved up on one platform and delayed on another, as well as some other stuff that's been happening. But before we talk about that, we'll talk about what we've been playing, and I'll kick it off here. I've been playing some more Final Fantasy 16, enjoying that a lot. I think I got to the part of the game where now they intentionally show you side quests, because there's a good chunk of the first, like, 5, 6, 7 hours that it just was like, we're doing main quest stuff here, and that's it. We're not doing anything else. Then you essentially have a certain somebody become a party member, and you're like, all right, now you can do all the weird shit. And not even really weird shit, but just like people giving you busy work, essentially. So far, I've not seen any that seem all that amazing, though they do tell you up front, like, hey, there's a special icon for when these give you, like, good stuff. Permanent items or stuff like that. So that might be something to keep an eye on for me, but right now I'm just doing whatever, because it doesn't really matter to me too much. But enjoying it. Story stuff has been pretty good. One revelation has happened that I was kind of expecting. We'll see how that goes. Although there's other stuff that I'm like, okay, this, I guess I know who this person is now. I'm pretty sure, unless they're going to do something weird. So that's interesting. Basically got to another town outside of Rosaria. And I'm doing some stuff there. So that's been pretty much it for that one. Let's see. Also been playing Kingdom 80s. This is the newest game in the Kingdom series of, you know, essentially like base building strategy games of sorts. But instead of being set in like medieval fantasy times, it is set in the 80s with a very kind of Stranger Things kind of vibe to it. They're like, oh, you're you know, a descendant of the royals from the previous games, complete with like a big crown that you wear, or like it might be a crown backpack or something like that. But you get to ride on bikes instead of horses, and sort of the big bad, whatever they call them, the bad slime guys have sort of appeared in town, and you're sort of going around taking them out to accomplish your goals. This is a little bit more of a linear game than the others, which are more sort of open, survival-ish kind of things. But here you kind of have set goals in each of the areas. So like the first one's like, they took our canoe. We got to get that back so we can, you know, get out of this area kind of thing. And you're even specifically setting up a big like dumpster that you're able to move around, have one of your people as you know, kind of exploring around. You're getting new people in your crew, so I have like a girl that does tech stuff or more building stuff. You have your sporty jock who's the one that pushes the dumpster around, and I just got a tech nerd who sets up like robots and shit. That's what he does when you go on the siege stuff, which is what you do with the dumpster. And so like, we just kept going around. Your like minions of sorts are these kids that show up. So you can hire them and set them on either archer jobs or builder jobs. So they go around and build stuff for you as you go around, or you give them archers or bows, and they go around and hunt animals to get you money for that kind of stuff. But when you go on the siege, like seven or eight of them get behind the dumpster as you're sort of pushing through. And the first time it's pretty easy. You're just going through this cave and kind of going around, and you just want to keep the dumpster far enough back to act as a shield so they can, you know, have a defense against the enemies that spawn, kind of thing. The first one's pretty simple. Once you get your canoe, you're kind of going right to the next section, which they break us up into episodes. So I'm in episode 2, which is also what the demo during Summer Game Fest was all about. So I did a video on that and died pretty quickly because I did not have all my mechanics down for it just yet. But with this one, I managed to get through. For the most part, you're trying to get this bridge fixed, and sort of as your tech guy is fixing it, you know, the enemies are sort of swarming in over it. It's not really broken. It's just, you know, it's one of those split bridges that somebody left up. And so your tech guy is like hacking into it to get it lowering, but enemies are coming over it, all that kind of stuff. But got a really cool vibe to it. Having the other people with you is pretty cool. When you're doing the typical stuff, not your sieging, just hanging out in your base at night, they'll go run out and take out enemies for you, kind of stuff, because you can't do any attacking on your own. All you're doing is paying for, you know, stuff to get built or destroyed or whatever. It's kind of all management there, but these three kids you have are able to do some cool stuff. So it's pretty cool. It's cheaper than the other games. It's, I think, $12 instead of 20 or 25, like the other games have been. So it's single player. I think the others had, or at least the last one had co-op to it. But this is a bit more linear kind of thing. I think it was potentially an expansion that they said, like, maybe we should just make this standalone kind of thing. So it's pretty neat. I'm looking forward to putting some more time into it. So that's been a fun one. It's only on PC right now. I thought it was supposed to come to consoles as well, but I think they've said that's going to be later this year for that stuff. But that's been cool. Then there's Power Wash Simulator, which has the new expansion to it, the special pack that is SpongeBob SquarePants themed, where you're going down to, you know, under the water to the various locales, Conch Street, the Krusty Krab, and the Mermelair, as well as the vehicles, the Bikini Bottom Bus, the Paddy Wagon, and the Invisible Boatmobile, are the six new locations that you get. And you get all the fun stuff. They've done a really good job with the visual stuff with that, these areas. So it looks just like the show does, with the backgrounds and all that. Works out really well for it. And like the Invisible Boatmobile is also really cool because it's invisible, but it's covered in dirt as you start. So as you clean it, it gets invisible, which makes it a little bit tough to see the dirt on the different parts, but it's not too hard for it. $8 for this, 6 maps, 10 new achievements. For whatever reason on Steam, they made them all hidden for some reason. I think it may show them as you start getting them. I don't know, but I ended up just using the new Steam feature with notes, where you pull up your little game menu that's essentially just trying to copy the Windows gaming thing that you can pull up with the Windows key plus G, I think. Where you can show up some extra things for like, oh yeah, I'm going to capture some stuff, or, you know, I want to show my, you know, system stats, or show me the achievements or whatever. You can kind of do that with the new Steam stuff. But I essentially found a guide's like, here's what the achievements are since they're hidden for some reason. And I just copied those into the notes and I could check it whenever I went to one of the new maps. So, it's really cool. It has a lot of references. I don't get a lot of them, but I do get some of them. I have not seen too much of the show. I've seen various episodes, but I don't feel like subscribing to. I think it's Paramount Plus that has it right now to watch all of it. So I'll watch it at some point. But this is a good one for people that enjoy that show, or just people that like the game want more maps for it. So that's cool. definitely worth checking out. And the other game I played is Ghost Trick Phantom Detective. That also came out earlier this week. That is kind of a cult classic DS game that came out, I think it was about 2011, I think it was, on the DS. It's from the creator of the Ace Attorney series that sort of wanted to make something new and made made this game, which is less of a visual novel adventure game and more of a puzzle adventure game, where you are in control of this dude named Cecil, his soul. He finds out about this whole weird thing that you can do as a dead person, where you can kind of possess other objects around you, kind of thing, and have the ability to activate some of them to do stuff. So you're kind of using this to get around and solve problems. Usually early on, it's this person's about to get murdered by this hitman. So what if you do a bunch of stuff to figure out how to keep them from getting murdered? That kind of thing. But you eventually use the telephone lines to get out of there to different areas to get to other areas and do stuff there. Some of them are just purely, you're going to learn story here. This is, the lair of the bad guy that's, had you killed and is trying to get these other people killed kind of stuff. And you can just fuck with them while you're learning more about, what's going on, that kind of stuff. But it's got a really great style. The animations are really well done. I think it's some of the best animations in any game around. But yeah, it's a very cool game. $30. It's on everything, I believe. So that's one worth checking out at some point if you haven't played it previously, or if you have, it's a good one to revisit, show some support. I doubt we're going to get anything new out of the series, out of this game. But for here, they've added, made it playable on a single screen, because I think the original had story stuff on the top as you, dragged your soul around in the bottom. They made it pretty playable on one screen with the controller stuff. They've added music player. I think they had a rearranged, an arranged soundtrack. But you can also play with the original soundtrack, all that kind of stuff. It's a really cool game. Really great style to it. And if you play the demo up front, I think they unlock an extra song in the background for you. Since it's a DS game, it's mostly 4x3. They let you fill in the background, the sides with two different wallpapers. They've innovated on that kind of technology where you can set a separate one on each side. I set up the two wallpapers that had Missile on it. Missile the Pomeranian, the best character in this game. When he shows up, he's just like, "Hey, what the hell's going on? Why am I here?" And you're like, "Oh, you're dead." He's like, "Oh, okay. Let's just deal with it." He's just super positive and all that for being a dead dog. It's a really cool game. So that's been pretty much it for me. So how about you, Brandon? What have you been doing?
Well, because the embargo has finally lifted a couple days ago, I can finally talk about the quote unquote secret game that I've been playing this whole time. And it's Trails into Reverie. This is it's not the latest game in the Trails series. There's already a couple of them more out that are part of the Calvard arc that are already in Japan. But this is the latest one to get an English translation. And basically its whole purpose is to wrap up all of the hanging plot threads that were still that were still at the end of Cold Steel 4. Essentially, what the essential game story is about is it's telling sort of the story of how Crossbell finally gets its independence, which is basically after the end of Cold Steel 4, when Erebonia makes it clear that they're basically paying reparations to the Republic of Calvard. They're also agreeing to demilitarize and sort of deconstruct a bunch of their military. A bunch of Imperial Defense Force soldiers decide that they don't like that, so they try to attempt to occupy Crossbell. It obviously doesn't work, because by that point, everybody in Crossbell is just sick of them. And so eventually they end up kicking them out, and finally, the government of Crossbell manages to arrange it so that the suzerain over their country is transferred over to the Holy City, where, you know, the goddess religion, you know, the Eidos religion, the Eidos Church is located, which basically means they are an independent nation, finally, for the first time in its history. But just as they're getting ready to, you know, Chairman McDowell, the current head of the government, is getting ready to sign his name to the independence papers to make it official, a group calling themselves the Ebon Defense Force show up and very quickly take over the city. And it seems to be, on the face, be controlled and led by none other than Rufus Albarea, the original governor general of the city back when it was under Imperial occupation in the previous series. Except there are some things about it that are kind of odd, especially considering the fact that he's supposed to be in prison right around that point. So eventually the Ebon Defense Force wastes no time taking over the city. They clamp down on everything. They start a information blackout that basically cuts the city completely off from the rest of Zamoria. The special support section is essentially cast to the four winds and have to flee the city. And so essentially what their job at that point now is, they have to regroup, get some allies, and try to finally liberate Crossbell for hopefully the last and final time. But as this is happening, you've got two other plot threads that are happening. One is happening in Erebonia, and it has to do with Green and the members of Class 7 finding out, first being one of the first groups to find out from, you know, their intelligence agency that Rufus seems to have taken over Crossbell and made himself dictator of the city. And apparently his plans are that he's trying to create the quote-unquote United Nation of Zamoria, with him as leader and Crossbell its new capital. So since they're basically not able to actually get into Crossbell right now, they figure out that what they can do is they can try and track down various sympathizers within the Imperial Defense Force who might turn over or might be collaborating with Rufus. And so essentially a bunch of their story arc is them trying to track down all the sympathizers and try to prevent what it appears to be trying to state what it looks like Rufus is trying to stage a war or a battle that'll restart the war. And then again, the other plot thread that is happening as this is happening is that these two kids are fleeing from this nebulous organization. They appear to be like child soldiers who have been given the task of delivering this package to a guy going under the label C. And then C shows up, and he's wearing a mask and looking, you know, wearing a trench coat and everything, and he claims to be the leader of the quote-unquote reborn Imperial Liberation Front. But it's very clearly not Crow, mostly because, one, Crow has long since, you know, abandoned that moniker, and two, he doesn't use pistols like Crow does. He uses a broadsword. And essentially, the way the game works is you can switch between all three of these various plot threads pretty much at will. With a few exceptions, there are points where a particular story arc can't go further until another person in another plot thread completes a certain action. And then, of course, there are various points in the game where that involves this mysterious mirror that shows up in the pockets of all three leaders of the various story arcs. And what happens is this mirror basically transports them into this digital dominion, digital dimension called Elysium, where they can basically are told to go through a, I think it might not be, but it looks like a procedurally generated dungeon that they have to go through, where they can get things like, you know, new items. They can, you know, increase your level. You can get things like side stories, mini games, stuff like that. And yeah, it's very fascinating. It seems to also be sort of setting up the plot for what's going to happen with Kuro no Kiseki, which is the next Trails game that takes place, that starts off the Calvard arc. We'll find out. But and also I'm playing Street Fighter VI in between, you know, playing Trails and Reverie. And I haven't played it as much as I would like to, but it's definitely a lot of fun. The world tour especially is just incredibly entertaining for just how unbelievably cheesy and hilarious it is. And just simply the fact that you can literally just pick a fight with anyone that you come across, as long as you, as you know, you're able to. Literally anybody from old ladies to police officers to the dudes running the food trucks, just anyone basically you come in contact with. It's very fun. But yeah, that's what I've been playing. So, Bill, what about you?
So, well, I've also been playing a bit of Street Fighter VI. I kind of agree pretty much entirely with what Brandon just said there. I spent a lot of time with the arcade mode, though, and that's actually quite well done. You know, you can do either 5 or 12 stages if you want. There's bonus stages in there. It's all very well done. What I'll say about Street Fighter VI in general is that one of the biggest complaints of Street Fighter V when it launched was that it had a lack of content. That is not a problem with Street Fighter VI.
Nope, this one is overflowing with content.
Yeah, so I mean, there's pretty much ways to play the game any way you want. I mean, there's a big battle hub that you can go in and play online, go up to arcade cabinets, and you can play Final Fight if you want. You know, there's versions of Street Fighter 2 there that you can go and play, and when you do, you unlock those in your gallery and stuff like that.
Okay, I clearly have not been playing SF6 enough. I didn't know that Final Fight was playable on there.
Yeah, it's in the battle hub.
Can you do that from the beginning, or do you have to unlock it?
No, you just got to go up to it.
Oh, God. Okay.
It's there.
Yeah.
Gotcha. I've only been, like, playing around with all the characters and on one-on-one. I haven't even touched any real mode.
Yeah, it's definitely worth checking out the battle hub. Even if you don't, like, play online matches there's, you know, a bunch of stuff in there to unlock just by going up to it and interacting with it. So that's worth it.
That's awesome. Cool.
Yeah. And if you don't want to do any of that battle hub stuff and you just want to play online, there's, you know, a perfectly functional online matchmaking mode as well. So it's like you can really play Street Fighter VI any way you want to. So I've been enjoying it quite a bit. But this week for me mostly it's been AEW Fight Forever. Been waiting a long time for a wrestling game that kind of captures the gameplay style of the old N64 wrestling games, like No Mercy, WCW, NWO Revenge, those kind of games. Well, this one definitely does that. It is fast. It is very easy to pick up and play. It's like, it doesn't bog you down with a whole lot of tutorials. It's like, you start a match, William Regal points out a couple of things that you need to do. You know, if you get into a section where some new mechanic is going to be introduced, well, you get another little tutorial screen there, which is, you know, basically a couple of lines just saying, hey, this is what you got to do. And then you just keep on going. So it's like, it takes a total of maybe about 5 minutes and you've got the controls down for this game. And after that, it's just, you know, experiment, figure out what the controls will do when you use them in different contexts. And yeah, it's very, very strange and amazing things can happen. Yes, I've been really, really enjoying that. I really have to say one thing that I absolutely love about this game is the sound design is amazing. With a couple of exceptions, like there's some voice acting in there, like Jim Ross is there and he sounds like he doesn't really want to be there. But, you know, you got Excalibur in there. He's Excalibur, so he's just always himself, so that's fine. But all the wrestler taunts and stuff are really...
From what I've played so far, out of the voice acting you do here, it's all just, like, one-liners? There's no any actual real conversation, right?
Right, right. But, yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, it's like... But, it's like, sometimes, like, Jim Ross will be introducing the pay-per-view that you're about to go into and stuff like that, and... Yeah, the enthusiasm just isn't there, you know? It's like he's reading off a script and he's not really, you know, emoting like he usually does when he's on a show. So mm-hmm. it kind of falls a little flat there. But apart from that, the crowd in this game is amazing. It's like, it's got to be one of the best crowds in wrestling I've ever heard. They're very reactive. They'll be chanting for what you're doing. The obligatory holy shit chant is definitely in there, along with some other ones, of course. What else do I got to say about it? It's just, oh yeah. And the sound effects for a lot of the moves are really, really good. Like, getting hit with a super kick, ow, that does sound nasty. So you can tell that the people that worked on this really are definitely into wrestling. Well, of course they would be, since, you know, Kenny Omega was one of the people who was very much a active contributor to the game's development. So yeah, it's basically, it hasn't let me down. I've been playing the crap out of it ever since I got the review code. I bought all the DLC for it now. So I've been just enjoying the hell out of it, and I can keep playing it, working my way to the King of Hearts achievement so I can unlock Owen Hart and be playing as him. So, yeah. So that's kind of been pretty much it for me, Denner.
Yeah, a couple of the games that I've been playing, or actually all the games I've been playing, are stuff that everyone here has also been playing. I've also been playing AEW Fight Forever. Got my code the same day Phil did. He's playing on Xbox, and I've been playing on PS5. And, yeah, like, I've been looking forward to this game for a long time, especially knowing that Kenny Omega is fully behind it as far as, like, you know, really bringing wrestling back to its N64 roots. Like, you know, the Aki system is known for being really easy to pick up and play at the same time. Like, you can go ahead and call your movements as you see them because, like, I don't know, if you've ever played games in that era, like, you kind of know what to expect, and you'll immediately know what you're doing. The thing that throws me off is that, aside from just the strike button, you also have the kick button. So that was a little tough getting used to, especially as I was trying to use my grapple movement, and I noticed, like, this is not a suplex. These are more grapple strikes, and it was different in that regard. So you have to keep in mind that the developer was still Yuke's, and in the GameCube PS2 era, Yuke's was very against the Aki system, so having Omega try to convince him to go back to this was probably one of the reasons why it was in development hell. And, like, you know, when you start playing the game, and if you're really, really hardcore into wrestling, you can tell it was in development hell. Like, William Regal should not be in this game, neither should Cody Rhodes, who you could unlock with the AEW bucks, by the way, but, like, it's only for 10,000, which you pretty much have at the very start. And, yeah. I'm liking some of the modern ways to keep you hooked into this. Like, they have daily challenges where all you got to do is, you know, win a match with a certain wrestler or perform certain moves a number of times. And yeah, they change every day, and these will go ahead, these will add to the various consumables you have to go ahead and unlock people. The custom parts really leave a lot to be desired. If you're expecting to, like, make arenas that were as good as they were in WWE 2K23, it's nowhere close. But at the same time, the gameplay is king, and I think this has WWE beaten in that regard. So far, I'm enjoying the I think it's called the Road to the Elite, Phil.
Yeah, Road to the Elite. Called.
And it's funny because it's really stupid, and, like, I am all over the stupidity here. Like, you go from city to city, and then aside from getting ready for your matches, you have to decide whether you want to eat, whether you want to sign autographs, or whether you want to work out. And then when you work out, like, there's a number there that tells you, oh, you're going to get injured if you work out today, so don't work out. So cool, I'll go ahead and eat. And then if you eat twice, you end up eating the same shit that you ate in that city already. And it gives you, like these dumb facts. It's like, oh, one of the perks you get when you're an AEW wrestler is you get to eat at all the coolest places around the world. But yeah, I'm pretty sure I wouldn't want to eat the same thing twice on any trip. But you know, it is what it is there. But it's interesting. I'm doing my journey as a Jungle Boy who just turned heel on AEW, and it's not going very well. So it's really interesting seeing how all the wrestlers are treating me as I go through my journey. I'm not very far into it, but so far I've been having fun in that regard. The main thing that I didn't like is that it starts off with the casino battle royal, and the battle royal is one thing that this game like doesn't really do right, primarily because it's too N64 in the sense where it only allows four people in a ring, and then the next person comes in after you eliminate someone. And you know, we're used to like, all right, there's 10 guys in the ring, there's three people taking a rest outside and things like that. And yeah, it's not as easy to knock people out either. Like, I was at my special, and then Matt Hardy just threw me out, like, after I used my special move on some other guy. And I was like, oh, come on, I shouldn't be eliminated because of this. But at the same time, I was glad it was over, because I don't want to go through, like, all 21 men. So there's that. But, yeah, AEW Fight Forever, definitely a fun game. I would only say it's worth the 60 if you know what you want out of it. And what you should want is the whole N64 vibe, because this has it all. I've only played single matches so far, and tag team matches, and the aforementioned battle royal. I haven't played like the barbed wire death match that.
Yeah, the barbed wire death match is amazing.
So I'll definitely do that. I'm not as into the sound design as he is. Like, I for one think the Fight Forever and Holy Shit moments are kind of dumb, because like the things that you do don't really warrant the chant for me. And that's something that like fans don't really understand either, because like I've been to a whole bunch of takeovers and AEW events, and like they always cheer "This is awesome" over things that aren't really all that awesome, especially if you've been a wrestling fan for a while. But you know, it is what it is. You have fun, and it's definitely clear that the people that did work in the game, who weren't a part of the hell, were definitely having fun with it too. I mean, like, I've worked on a wrestling game myself, and like one of the things that I was in charge of was going on WWE Network to record sound bits, because that was the only way that WWE would approve anything. So I'm pretty sure that AEW had similar things with what they dealt with. And I'm just wondering, like, if everything they've gotten for the sound design or anything at all came from just AEW, because I'm pretty sure there's some WWE stuff they've stolen in there. But otherwise, like I said, AEW is a fun game, totally worth the 60 if you're from that year. But like, if you're someone who wants like some more of the glitz and glamour you see out of the WWE 2K games, it's not quite there. But there's a good foundation here, and you know, if AEW wants to go annualize with their installations, you know, I'm all about it, as long as I see like the proper evolution. But then when I think about it, you know, going from WrestleMania to No Mercy, there really wasn't that much of an improvement to begin with, and they were just fun to deal with. So hopefully, you know, they improve the customizations and creating your own wrestlers and things like that with the mod community, so that way it'll be evergreen in its own right. But yeah, really enjoying AEW Fight Forever. It's definitely taken a lot of time out of the main game I've been playing, which is Final Fantasy 16. I'm about maybe 10, 11 hours in now. And I've gotten to some points in the game where I was like, oh, okay, they did that. And, you know, I'm specifically talking about things like character changes and things like that. They've done a really good job making you care about these characters, which is way more than I can say about like the past few Final Fantasies. Like, I didn't care about anybody in 15. I didn't care about anybody in 13. 12, I never even finished. So yeah, like, it's gone a long way to really make me care about these characters. And, you know, on the internet, on the Twitters, whatever, a lot of people are saying, hey, like, this shouldn't be Final Fantasy. And like, my only response to that is, if it's a good game, it's a good game. And Final Fantasy has always been a series that's always tried to, you know, push the envelope as far as like what a JRPG can do. You know, with Final Fantasy VII, like, that was a big step onto like the steampunk environment, and at the same time just going into the heavily cutscene kind of games that we see in RPGs nowadays. You know, with 8, they went a little crazy with the dungeon system. 9, they tried to go back to its roots, which at the same time alienated people who were into 7 and 8 and things like that. So, you know, it's not out of the ordinary to see Final Fantasy have this sort of evolution through devolution, if you want to call it that. But like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, the battle system I find very fun. I've gotten to a point where I can use 3 different kinds of magic. So just being able to use these in my combos through various ways, in addition to my equips, really just makes it all sing. Like, especially as someone that's really enjoyed Platinum games and what they've done with with the DMC titles. Like, it's crazy that you can do this in Final Fantasy in such a way that actually makes sense. It has their own answer to materia and, like, classes in regards to the things that you can equip. I mentioned last week that I had a hard time because I disabled the equip that allowed me to have automatic dodges in place of more defense. And now that I put that back, like, I'm having an easier time with enemies, and at the same time, it's making me feel like I'm growing. And, like, the story so far, you know, a lot of people are going to say Game of Thrones, but Game of Thrones is not the first medieval story to be, like, you know, this barbaric, if you will. Like, it does it in a very Final Fantasy way. The way it mixes a lot of the old music into there is great. You know, you have everything from crystals to Moogles to chocobos. Like, it's very Final Fantasy, and, like, I don't really care what people have to say against it. I'm having a lot of fun with it, and it's definitely a great entry for people who, you know, want to get back into it, or, like, they just want to, you know, see what all the fuss is with the action combat system, as well as, like, just to see where the series has come as a result. Like, I know the fantastical setting isn't going to be for everyone, but at the same time, like, it's for me, and, like, that's also one thing I appreciate about it as well. My other thing is, I've been really taking my time with it. I'm really starting to enjoy the story because of the side quests. One of the common themes with this one is pretty much, like, racism and slavery, which is weird because, you know, obviously one of the controversies with this game is everybody is white, so why is there racism? But, like, no, there's really some deep stuff here. There was a side quest I did where there was this dad who apparently his son was being attacked, and he wanted me to help him out. But, like, when you talk to him, it didn't seem like he cared much about helping out his son, because, you know, why don't you do it? It's your son. You should go help him out anyway. But he's like, yeah, go ahead and, you know, help my son, slave. So I go ahead and go over to where his son is. He's being attacked by a wolf, and then I kill the wolf. And all of a sudden, like, the kid is just complaining. He's like, no, that wasn't supposed to happen. You were supposed to die. And he goes off on this whole, like, racist tirade saying, all of you branded were supposed to, like, get killed by my wolf. This is my pet. So, yeah, my main character is like, okay, cool, whatever. And then we go back to the guy's dad, and his dad is like, how dare you kill my son's pet? I'm like, this wolf was attacking your son. You told me to save your son. And you're going to blame me for killing the wolf? So, yeah, they do that. The kid is mad at me. He's like, oh, I don't like the way he's talking to me, father. And then I leave because prior to me being there, the wolf actually killed, like, other branded. And the branded is what they call, like, the slaves, if you will. As far as their definition, they're actually magic users that are just being abused for their magic. And they're not of royal blood. So anyway, I go back to where the attacks happened, and then I see, like, three dead corpses. So as the main character decides to bury them, he comes across another character. He's like, oh no, not more. And he knows about the situation. He's like, it's okay, karma will eventually get them. And then, like, the camera pans out and zooms in on the house of the boy and his father, and then you hear a wolf just, like, mangle them. And it was a wolf that they had just bought to replace the previous one. So I was like, oh yeah, that's pretty gruesome, but, you know, they had what's coming. And then on that same hill, there's another side quest with a little girl who apparently lost her doll named Chloe. And then she asked me to look for it. And then, you know, I'm looking for it. I ask another village person, hey, have you seen this little girl's doll? Her name's Chloe. Has nice white hair. He's like, oh, there's one by the windmill. So I go to the windmill and I see a dog with white hair, but it wasn't the dog that we were looking for. It was actually another branded slave. That had white hair, but she succumbed to the disease where they use too much of their magic and then they all of a sudden freeze. And, like, yeah, she's dead. So it's a corpse there, and all of a sudden the little girl finds me. It's like, oh no, Chloe, what happened? And, like, she doesn't know what death is because she believes that the branded people don't have families, don't have feelings, and can't die. So my main character just tells her, oh yeah, of course she has a family. Like, you took her away from her family so she can live with yours, and this is how you've treated her. Remember that. And, like, just making her feel bad, like, felt awesome. And she cries, and it's the end of the side quest. And I was like, this is some badass stuff. So, yeah, really enjoying what I'm playing out of Final Fantasy 16. And then I finished Trails into Reverie about a week and a half ago. I finished it before the embargo. The review is up. And, yeah, like Brandon said, the thing that sets this game apart is the fact that there are three separate quests. One where you use Reed Schwarzer from Trails of Cold Steel. The other where you use Lloyd Bannings from the Crossbell games that just came out, and then the other one where you use C. And even though there's three separate quests, they all eventually converge into one. And it's one of those things where you can't just overplay your quest, right? People are going to love Reen, people are going to love Lloyd, but you can't just play Lloyd the entire time. You have to actually switch between them. And when you get to a point where you have to switch, the game will tell you. And at the same time, it's a good thing, because one of the hardest things to manage in the game is that there are a lot of characters, and you can only have
a lot of characters.
So, at the end of Trails of Cold Steel 4, you could pretty much use any character you've ever been introduced to, and Trails into Reverie does that right away. So, this is one of the reasons why, like, whenever we talk about the latest Trails game, we tell you to go all the way back to Trails into the Sky, because you're not going to appreciate it unless you know who any of these people are. And like, that's a big part of it there. So the way they split them is pretty cool. Like with Lloyd, you're getting a lot of people from Liberal. With Reen, you're getting pretty much everybody you met in Erebonia. And then with C, he has a whole bunch of new characters and a bunch of people from the rest of the games too. So it's really interesting going through all those routes. And as he mentioned, their routes kind of converge when you reach what's called the Reverie Corridor. And this is pretty much similar to the old Lighthouse or Phantasma from Trails in the Sky the Third, where none of this stuff actually helps the plot. It's really just there to grind. So that was kind of like a weird convenience for me, just because, like, you know, I guess it was a way to put something in here just for fan service, because you're there to grind, but all of the grinding you can do in the actual game, like, works for what it is. But at the same time, you do have some fan service-y stuff. Like, there's these new quests that you can take part in to learn more about the various characters in your party. Like, for example, there's one where you're in Saint Astrea's school, and that is, like, just for all girls. And there's a point there where the main character of that story is Kurt Vander. So, of course, they're going to make him cross-dress and put a wig on. And, like, you know, it's very reminiscent of what they did with Joshua in Trails in the Sky. So that's some cool fan service there. And then, of course, there's the nasty fan service where, you know, you're in the beach, and all right, Reen can go, or is it Reen? Yeah, it's Reen. He can go ahead and, like, choose to have a drink with his favorite Trails girl. And this is where PlayStation 4 VR comes in. You can have a conversation with pretty much any girl in the game, and then you can, like, you know, just look at their assets. And then the longer time you look at a certain area, they'll start to change their dialogue. And I was like, that's really awkward, but, you know, harem games, it is what it is with that. There's also mini games. You can do things like jet skiing. You can play Vantage Masters, which is their card game. You can play Pom Pom Party. There's just a whole lot to do every quarter. That's at the end of the day, it's a waste of time, but it's a good way to just, like, you know, sort of like take the edge off, because there's a lot of there's a lot of dense stuff in this game, because obviously with what Brandon talked about, like, it's big into the Civil War, and it pretty much is a prelude to what's going to happen in the upcoming games. I think they're in English, it's Trails to the Dark or whatever. And so this game pretty much wraps up the stories in both Erebonia and Crossbell, and at the same time is a precursor to the Calvert games. And the main thing here is that this is the last Trails title we're getting that's confirmed. So we don't know whether we're going to get those next two games yet. So hopefully, like, this succeeds. And it's just another great entry into a great series. I gave this game a 4. Main reason being, I just didn't find the Reverie corridor all that useful, despite everything it offers for, like, extra lore itself. And the fact that, you can't just play Trails into Reverie. Like, I mean, like, you could, but, you know, why would you want to watch Avengers Endgame when you haven't seen any other NCU movie? Really, this doesn't make any sense. I have to dock it in that regard. Like, it's not an entry point at all. So when you try to convince people to get into the series, this is not the first game I'm gonna recommend. At that, it's also one of the shorter ones. It's like 50 hours, and the fact that I have to say that's short is just a testament to how crazy long these games are. So that's about it for me.
All right. So let's get to some news. And it is a new month, so your subscription services have new games for you. We'll talk about PlayStation Plus here. They have three new games. All of them are for PS5 and PS4. To start off, Call of Duty Black Ops Cold War. So yeah, you'll be able to check out, I don't even know which one this is, how old this one is. This is from 2020. Okay. So I think that's the last one that people liked that wasn't a Modern Warfare game. Mm-hmm. So that's a solid choice there for the people that want that, as they try to figure out what they're going to do with Call of Duty this fall. Like, there's rumors of maybe they're not being a game, or might have another one that doesn't have a campaign in it. Mm-hmm. Who knows? But you'll be able to check that one out. Let's see. Yeah, also for PS5, PS4, Alan Wake Remastered. A good way to get into the series before the second game comes out this fall.
Yes. Yep. Highly recommend it.
I've never played it, so this is awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. I will tell you, just right off the bat, even though it is a very good remaster, by the character animations, you will still be able to tell that this is like an old school, this game is a few years old. Let me just put it that way.
I mean, it's Xbox 360 era. I mean, you gotta give it
some.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go for that. That'll be one to check out. And the third game is Endling, and Extinction is Forever. It's a neat looking indie game. I've been looking at this one for a little while now. It came out last year. This is one where you are the last mother fox on Earth. Your cubs need all your care to survive in a merciless world that slowly destroys itself. So, you know, very positive game there for you to check out. So there you go. Those are the three games for this month. Some solid stuff there.
Yeah.
Then let's get to Games with Gold, which has two games again. There's Darkwood here starting July 1st to the 31st. This is one of those horror games that I'm not sure what kind. I guess this is kind of a survival horror game of sorts. It's top-down, that kind of thing. So a lot more action-focused, I guess, than the typical that are just narrative-focused. Mm-hmm. Oh, and it has randomly generated maps and events. So cool, not even able to learn what's going on. And deal with that. So there you go for that. And starting on July 16th to August 15th, there is When the Past Was Around.
Mm-hmm.
An adventure point-and-click puzzle game about love, moving on, letting go, and the joy and pain of everything in between. So that at least looks neat.
Yeah, I actually played that game. It was the first game I beat this year. Even though it's a point-and-click, it's actually very, very hard. I needed an FAQ for later chapters. But, you know, once you do that, it's also an easy platinum.
Yeah, so there's your Games with Gold games. So, some okay stuff there, depending on what you're into. So, there you go for that. But not to be outdone, Nintendo Switch Online Plus Expansion Pack got four new Genesis games. Let's see. There's Crusader of Senti. This looks like an action game, action RPG.
Yeah, that's basically Sega's answer to Zelda.
Yeah. I am seeing screenshots here. That's a legally distinct Zelda. So there you go for that. There's Ghouls and Ghosts, so that's a game you should definitely be playing with the Rewind and the Save States.
Yep.
You're not going to get through it otherwise for that, so there you go. I was like, hey, play Gargoyle's Quest, the spinoff that's playable on the Game Boy. It's like, okay, it's a completely different game, but okay. Let's see, there's Landstalker. Lighthearted treasure hunting. Sort of a Nigel the Forest elf faces more delightful puzzles in this action adventure. Okay. So there you go for that.
Been a while, but I actually finished that one back in the day. It's worth the playthrough.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there you go, an isometric one, and then The Revenge of Shinobi.
Yeah.
That's the second game, or is that the third one in the series?
Second. It's also the version that's on NSO is also the one with without any of the copyright infringing characters. So
no Spider-Man?
Yeah, no Spider-Man, no Batman.
No Godzilla.
Or Godzilla. Yeah.
It really was the Wild West back then, huh?
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, so there you go. That's a side-scrolling action game where you're Shinobi just doing your shit, throwing shurikens and stabbing people with your sword.
Yeah.
So there you go for that. So those are all available now, so you can check that out for the Genesis stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's some solid stuff there. But let's get into some dates here. Let's see. Pixel Junk Scrappers Deluxe finally has a release date. July 27th on PlayStation, Switch, and PC. Mm-hmm. I'm excited for this one. Because it's sort of a side-scrolling beat-em-up, but where you are a bunch of robots collecting trash in the streets. As you're doing that, you're battling rival garbage collectors in chaotic street brawls. Yeah, they got 5 worlds with 25 levels total. Yeah, 4-player co-op, online or local. You can customize your garbage truck with custom parts. You can recruit a variety of scrappers for your roster. Mm. Some mini games. And yeah, it's a neat looking game. Looking forward to that. This one, I think, was on Apple Arcade for a while.
Mm.
So finally coming to consoles and PC there. So that's cool. Looking forward to that.
Good stuff.
The other game got a date here. Bomb Rush Cyberpunk I think they announced August 18th for a little while. That was just Switch and PC. Now they've announced that they'll also be coming to PlayStation and Xbox shortly after that. So I think there's some timed exclusivity on the Switch at least. So those will be out a bit later for that. So that's cool. That is, if you don't remember, that's the game that's very much trying to be a new Jet Set Radio kind of game. Yeah. For that, yeah. So yeah, that's looking neat.
Mm-hmm.
For that, let's see, another one. This one, a weird story here for Baldur's Gate 3. Coming to PC and PS5 was supposed to be August 31st, but they decided to both delay it and move it up. The PC version was moved up to August 3rd because I guess it's ready a bit earlier there, and they delayed the PS5 version to September 6th. Mm-hmm. So that PS5 will have their big RPG game to check out.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And PC people can, I guess, get in there a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's a whole thing you can do.
Well, it has been like in early access on PC for the last 2 years. So
yeah.
For PC folks.
Yeah, they're very much talking a lot about how long it's going to take for people to beat this game, which they're saying like 75 hours, potentially up to 100 or more if you're doing everything in it.
So a medium-length Trails game.
Yeah, pretty much. Or your typical Baldur's Gate, I think.
Yeah.
Plus the reroll, so.
Yeah.
But yeah, there you go for that one. That's Larian's newest game. Looking real good.
Man.
So yeah, that's one to check out, especially if you're looking for something a little bit more old school, but with a lot of the stuff they've been doing over their last few games.
Yeah.
For there to modernize the Baldur's Gate experience, because those other games are like 30 years old at this point.
Yeah.
So there you go for that. What were you gonna say, Phil?
Yeah, and say, like, you know, they did do the enhanced editions of the older games, but, you know, some control tweaks here and there only get you so far. There's a lot of design choices back then that really haven't aged that well, so being able to play something more modern is definitely going to be appealing to a lot of people. So.
Yeah. Yep, so let's see here. Disney Speedstorm is finally leaving early access. It will launch as a free-to-play title on September 28th. That seems, I think people have been wondering if it's because the game has not been selling super well in early access. So they're just like, we'll just get it out there free to play, bring more people in. Because everything I've heard about this game is that it is free to play as hell with lots of currencies and stuff to unlock through many, many different means. that are very confusing at times for people.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how long this game has been in early access, but typically for a free-to-play game, the reason why it's in early access in the first place is to see what people will spend money on. And, you know, when it goes to full release, like, I don't know how much of a bare-bones game it'll be, but a lot of people do like that Animal Crossing-like game. So, I don't know, maybe they're looking to try to capture a similar essence there, but at the same time, it's like, we know what kind of audience they're trying to get with Dreamlight Valley. Whereas with Speedstorm, it's like, you know, Mario Kart doesn't do this, so I would assume this is not going to be as successful, but I guess we'll have to see.
Yeah. I mean, it didn't work for the Chocobo game that Square Enix released either, so.
Definitely did not work for that.
Yeah. Yeah, it went into early access April 18th, so it'll be barely 5 months before it's out. So that's probably more indicative that it was not exactly all that early.
Hmm.
In development as they're trying to figure out stuff. But yeah, probably just figuring out like what will people tolerate, and we'll back up the line as close as we can to that.
Mm.
Without going over. So yeah, that'll be interesting to check out here. So yeah, there you go. Mm. And yeah, last couple here, we got a new football game coming to the consoles and PC. It's called Wild Card Football. It is licensed with the NFLPA, so there's a bunch of actual players in it, as well mm-hmm. as Colin Kaepernick kind of being the cover athlete, I guess, for that. Though all the players in here have the exact same build for the most mm-hmm. part. I think some have like a little bit of a smaller waist and legs, but otherwise everybody else has giant shoulders and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, that's coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC October 10th for that. So, looks neat.
Yeah, another game by the NFLPA, not the actual NFL, so it'll be interesting seeing how they dodge those things. But yeah, I'm interested in seeing how this game plays. Saber Interactive hasn't been like the best as far as like giving us these arcade experiences, especially like, you know, when you want to go back to things like Midway or even EA Sports Big. They haven't been able to just capitalize off of that, so hopefully this does, but we'll see.
Yeah, there's not a ton of gameplay in the trailer from what I could see, but it almost kind of looks a little bit like if you had NFL Blitz mixed with like rugby, mm-hmm. I guess.
I'm hoping it ends up on Game Pass or either that give us like a slight discount on it, but
yeah, because a lot of the screenshots seem to have like pinball style bumpers on them that like if you run into it, knocks the ball out of your hands for somebody else to grab, that kind of stuff. So that looks like that could be all right.
Cool.
Next up here, we got another Apple Arcade game finally coming to other platforms. This is Air Twister coming from EaseNet. That's Yu Suzuki's mm-hmm. studio. And it is very much a Panzer Dragoon style shooter kind of thing coming to PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC November 10th. So that's neat to see that finally coming to other platforms. But yeah, you can look at it and be like, yep, that's exactly what he's making, you know, one of his old games, Space Harrier there. So it's a really dumb name. Air Twister gives you no idea what that game's about.
Yeah.
It took me a bit to realize, like, oh, this is that game. This is the Yu Suzuki game. Okay. This is their follow-up to Shenmue 3 is Air Twister. Sure.
Yeah, if I can get it physically, I'll pick that one up. So.
Yeah. There, and we got one more. It's not quite a date, but Scorn is coming to PS5 this fall, so PS5 people can get disgusted by this game. It's the first person horror game that is going all over the kind of H.R. Geiger or Giger aesthetic there of a lot of upsetting sexual stuff going on in that game. So there you go. That'll be happening for people. So yeah. Let's get to some other news here. Final Fantasy 16 has reached 3 million physical shipments and digital copies sold in the, I think it was like 5 days after launch. So that's pretty good news. Doing pretty well for a game that's only on a PS5 that doesn't have that many consoles out there still at this point, like 35 million. So doing pretty well for the launch of this. So yeah, that's a.
I think what's kind of interesting about Final Fantasy 16 is that Square is actually looking at this as a long tail game and not expecting it to do massive numbers straight from the start. You know, 3 million is nothing to sneeze at, but you know, it'll probably get to 10, 15, but it's just probably not going to happen right away.
Yeah, that's something I'll work on. I think they've said they're going to have some other stuff for this game, maybe an expansion at some point, but at the very least, probably do some sort of crossover with 14, since a lot of the team has worked on both of those games.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, they obviously like hit a fire with this one, and like, I don't know about you guys, but like, as long as I've been like as involved as I am, I don't remember the last time a demo won so many people over, including myself. So I think that's definitely one they've hit the park too, and maybe down the line we'll probably see more developers, Square Enix included, just release like, you know, good demos.
I mean, demos are kind of important. I mean, back when I was growing up, I found a lot of games that I wouldn't have normally even considered playing because of those PC Gamer demo discs. So you kind of got to get back to those.
Yeah, Square Enix has done a lot of those.
Yeah, basically all of their RPGs have basically had demos come along with them.
Yeah. So yeah, some good news for Square Enix. I guess this is good news for Nintendo. They said, hey, we're not going to create a new account system for our next console, which is great. I think we've gone through, this will be the fourth one with the Switch, because the Wii had one.
Yeah.
The Wii U had a different one. Then there was the
DS and the 3DS.
Yeah, the 3DS had a different one until they merged it with the Wii U one.
Yeah.
And then had the Nintendo account that then you merged your Wii U / 3DS account so that it could use the wall that crossed all three. Then they shut down the Wii U and 3DS eShop, so that's no longer an issue. I can't use those
anymore, so.
Yeah, so I think they're probably looking to, at the very least, not require people to make a new account and lose purchases to the previous device. Seems like they're looking to do some sort of BC here.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, you also have to consider that the Nintendo account also covers Nintendo's mobile stuff. So, I think they probably hit on one that actually works now, so I don't see why they would have to change it.
Because it's tradition.
Yeah, I mean, like, as much flack as we get for, like, you know, being so behind with online stuff, you know, like Phil said, I think they finally hit the nail on the head what worked for them. And yeah, ever since we've merged the eShop with the NNID, like, it's been easier. It hasn't been the easiest, especially when you're buying new Switches and just transferring them all over. But at the same time, like, you know, I hate to give them a pass for it, but it works. So as long as it works, you know, I'm all good there. We seem to be at a point where Nintendo is like really only trying to make money off of re-releases that actually put some effort into them, right? Like, you know, we see Super Mario RPG, we're seeing like Pikmin 3 Deluxe, games like that. But like the days of like going to Virtual Console 3-4 times seem to be dead. At the same time, it's like, I wish it didn't happen because I have a lot of Virtual Console stuff that I don't have access to anymore, only because like, I forgot the passwords and the online things are dead and hard. But yeah, like when the eShop, 3DS eShop died, I definitely made a few purchases there. And I was surprised to see that I already had $200 on it because I actually redeemed the eShop cards on my Switch, which my 3DS read. So I was like, okay, this makes it a whole lot easier. And hopefully it just, you know, is... You know, hopefully it gets easier, and if not, hopefully it, like, it sort of stays the way it is. I'm not saying I want that to happen, but if that's the way it goes, so be it. And also, like, out of the three platforms, their reward system is still the best. So,
So, yeah, that should hopefully be good for whenever Nintendo decides to announce their next console.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So
whenever that's going to happen.
Probably be next year, if I had to guess.
Yeah. But yeah, there you go. Let's get to our last section of stories of developer things that have happened. And this is the one good one here. There was a big Skullgirls update that has angered the incel part of the community and just the shitty part of the internet as well. Because they essentially got rid of the last remaining like Nazi-ish symbols that had been in the game. Got rid of a lot of the panty shots of girls that are underage, that kind of stuff. The unnecessary sexualization, as well as just fixing a lot of balance stuff and all that. Because this is a game that's set not too far after like a World War II style war that just happened. So there are characters that have had, you know, the military outfit with the red armband kind of thing. No explicit like Nazi symbol on it, but something similar enough that you knew what they were going for. But they've decided like, what if we just get rid of that? And the shitty people have been complaining nonstop about it. But they seem to be committed to sticking to this course. Because again, they've already done some of this previously in the past few years. And people are fine, but a lot of people that probably have never played the games are very mad at the censorship. So yeah, there you go for that. This is why the fighting game community can really be terrible. There are a lot of these kind of people that are just that like their underage girls to be as sexual as possible for whatever dumb reason. That's been like one of the things about this game that people have found gross for a long time. It's like that kind of stuff and the Nazi stuff. And it's like great that they finally basically fix all that stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it would have been great if they hadn't put that kind of stuff in to begin with, but you know.
Yeah.
You can't really fault them for trying to fix a mistake.
Yeah.
It also kind of has to also tie on the fact that it wasn't like the original, like, development head of this game, like a huge sex creep or something.
Yeah, this is a whole new studio that took over a few years ago. So that is a thing here. Yeah, they said
there was a bit of a scandal regarding him.
Yeah. So much so, like, all the projects they were working on, he basically got removed from it entirely, which is like, all right, that's a good move.
Yeah.
Here they put out a statement. While Skullgirls is no stranger to characters that confidently express their sexuality, there are instances in the game where characters are fetishized or have sexualization imposed upon them. They also specifically call out certain examples of unwanted predatory behavior targeted towards younger characters. It's like, yep.
You don't want to do that. That's not cool.
Yeah, and talking about the Nazi stuff, we felt that the way that that manifested, most notably via red armbands, flags, and symbolism, was too close for comfort, especially given the unfortunate reality that some of these hate groups are still active in various respects to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Very reasonable stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the haters can go fuck themselves.
Yep.
Because they've done the right thing, so.
Yep. Remember, Nazis are only good for punching.
Yeah. But now let's get to the capitalism portion of this show.
Yep.
Let's see. The Lord of the Rings Gollum seemingly did so poorly that Daedalic Entertainment has said, we're laying off all of the internal development people, and we're not going to make any more games.
Oof.
Which sucks, because a lot of those people made some good stuff before that game.
Yeah.
They made a lot of classic adventure stuff. That was pretty well received. This was their attempt to like make something bigger. But that obviously did not go well. They say here, let's see. Daedalic Entertainment said 25 of its over 90-person team have been affected, saying it was a difficult decision, but one that'll mark a new beginning for Daedalic. They said that 8 promising releases are still coming in this financial year. It wasn't specified if these games are developed by the studio or someone else entirely. I assume those are all publishing games that they're doing. They tried for something a little bit further out of their scope than they usually did. And it seems like it did So poorly, they had to do a capitalism and lay off a bunch of people.
Yeah.
Definitely not the people that made the decision to make this game and keep going with it after all the delays.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go for that. Next up, Scavenger Studio, makers of Season, A Letter to the Past, that had already had plenty of issues beforehand as one of the lead, I mean, one of the co-founders of the studio, was found to be a shitty person. A lot of harassment, that kind of stuff. So they had to literally, like, remove them from the team and force them to go through, like, a mediator when doing work and all that kind of stuff. But it seems like that, among other things, probably affected the release of the game because they apparently only sold about 60,000 copies in its first 5 months. And so as a result, they ran out of options for keeping things going without laying off a bunch of its people. I'm trying to see if there's a number here. Potentially laid off like most of their studio. Let's see here. Given the current global economic context and Season's financial results, we have been left with no choice to make the difficult decision of downsizing the studio to a smaller, sustainable group of game developers, which just means parting way with all but approximately 16 members of the Scavenger Studio team. So that's probably not a great number of people there.
I mean, that does highlight kind of the reality of game development is that you know, not all of them are going to hit. And when they don't, you know, they can put a studio under completely.
Yeah. Seems like they had a lot of people to work on this game. And did not get the sales they needed to justify that. And now they're going to be, I think as they said, working on a new gameplay-driven project while the studio claims it will provide financial and psychological support as well as extended health coverage benefits to those laid off. So that's good. If they're getting severance for that, that's good at the very least. So
yeah, that's a decent way to handle it.
Yeah, stay afloat while they get the look for a new job.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. More capitalism going on.
Yep.
And next up, the most capitalism of the week. Niantic, having tried to remake the same game half dozen times at this point, has announced that they are laying off over 200 employees and scaling back developments on a few titles as it narrows its focus towards basically making Pokemon Go. So they've canceled their upcoming Marvel game. They released an NBA game earlier this year that they are shutting down, as well as I don't know what else they have that might be in that's out. But yeah, they do have
Minecraft one. I don't know if that was them or if that was Microsoft.
I'm not sure who that was. The Minecraft game.
No, they don't have Minecraft game.
Yeah, that got shut down. Pikmin Bloom, they still have going. Peridot, which they're trying to get people to play. Ingress, which has been around for a long time. And yeah, they've got Monster Hunter Now coming out at some point.
Yeah.
But Pokemon Go is their top priority as they try to figure out what people want. Because the most recent thing I've heard about that is they put an update that had a bug that people really liked because it made the game better. And they said, we can't have this. We have to fix this as soon as possible. Which seems to be the thing of like anything that makes the game better, they get rid of it as quickly as possible. And the things that make people like the game less, they're like, well, we'll fix it eventually.
We can't have our player base enjoying themselves. It's just, that's not how this works.
Yeah, that was the worst part of the pandemic is allowing people to not have to leave their homes to do some of this stuff. And they're like, no, we need you all to leave and risk your lives for our game. So yeah.
It's a bummer of an announcement. Obviously, like Niantic, leader in mobile gaming, sort of.
Well, they're definitely a leader in AR, at least.
Yeah, in AR, definitely. But like, you know, I don't think there's a certain thought Pokemon would. You know, Pokemon is a very powerful IP, and when you send people out in the world to catch these AR guys, successful. Obviously, it was most successful where they were just trying to figure it out, even making it money, and the game evolved since then and something totally different, but at the same time, like the core gameplay is there and like the game is but it's weird though, because you know, working in mobile gaming myself, like it seems like just from reading Twitter comments, is like the people that are complaining the most are people that want a certain feature that they have to, and was like, okay, maybe if they understood that, they would have like made the money they had to with the other studios open. But yeah, like the reason why I asked about the success of Pokemon is you can't just expect Pokemon success to translate over to NBA or Marvel. Like they're all gonna be there for their own reasons. You're not gonna catch a basketball player and use them in fight called slavery. You're not gonna do the same thing with Marvel. You're not really recruiting a team because. So yeah, like it's stuff like that, and you know I empathize for anybody that works at places, because you know the talent pool right now in gaming free agency is really really huge. Like just to put it to perspective, I actually applied for a job with NBA, and yeah, it's a good thing I didn't get it because I'd probably be out of a job. Knowing that there's people like in mobile gaming or just gaming free agency that there's people out there better than me, it's like it sucks. There's a lot of people who interviewed me who don't have jobs right now. And yeah, like you gotta feel for them. Like when this happened like maybe like 4 years ago, people would be like, oh yeah, don't worry, it takes care of itself, and that's always been the case, but it's been harder now. Like I know people who lost their jobs at other companies and still like, you know, 6 months in haven't been able to. It's scary.
Yeah,
you hope that these companies continue to just find a way, but at the end of the day, like it just goes to show that like not everything will work. Like Phil said, like if you have one failure, that's good enough to close a studio. Expectations these days are not what they used to be. And at the same time, everyone wants to have a game as a service. Everybody wants to have a game that you know you will only play. Everybody wants to have some sort of single player. A studio can't do everything. You gotta hire the right people, and at the same time, like you have to have like the right amount of KPIs to make them work. Like you know, we talked about Perfect Dark last week or 2 weeks ago, and like they're going through their own hell despite having so many veterans in the industry. So yeah, every situation is different. And like I said, hopefully the people who have who lost their jobs land on their feet. But yeah, I empathize with them. It's a really hard time right now.
Yeah. It seemed like a lot of Niantic's thing post Pokemon Go was like, what brands can we partner with to make a game that's similar to this? Yeah. So like Harry Potter and some of this other stuff was like, it doesn't work for everything. Unfortunately, but yeah, it's the sort of thing where they've tried this a bunch and it's like mostly just works for Pokemon.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, Niantic has some really good tech there. It's just, this whole you know geo-located type gameplay just doesn't work for everything. Like Dan Rev said, they gotta figure something else out because they've got some really good tech that they could use, but they have to figure out new ways to use it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and oftentimes with mobile gaming, one of the ways that they do their testing is by like testing it in like some nondescript territory. Like a lot of games are going to be tested in Canada or the Philippines first to see if they take off. Canada is going to be the closest to what they can do in America, and then they're going to see what they're spending their money on. What makes Niantic different is the fact that, yeah, they're actually relying on new and innovative ways to use their technology. It's not always going to be about microtransactions, and like that's what actually makes them attractive as a company. But seeing them like, you know, close a studio down for a game that hasn't even come out yet, like just goes to show that even though you have the innovation, you still got to make the money somewhere. Like at the end of the day, the game that you publish not only has to pay the salaries for everybody that works on it, but it also has to pay like for the building they're in. And like not every game can do that, especially if it doesn't make money in an evergreen way.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Niantic's story. Mm-hmm. And the next one, we'll get to the story here, is at least not about capitalism. CD Projekt Red has been talking, you know, doing PR and such around the new expansion for Cyberpunk 2077 kind of stuff, and talking to people about the game and all that. And In an interview with GameIndustry.biz, CD Projekt's VP of PR and Communication, Michael Plakow-Jaluski, talked about the game's journey to get to this point and the proposed redemption arc that Cyberpunk 2077 has been on since it launched less than 3 years ago, December of 2020, where, you know, the launch happened, the PS4 and Xbox One versions particularly were just full of bugs. It was unfinished, you know, to the point that all the major, you know, digital retailers said, you know, took in refunds without any questions asked as a result of that. Yeah. But according to Michael, he
actually could not finish the game. Like, you, the game, it literally could not get past this without any kind of updates, because one particular part of the game was just completely, it was literally unbeatable because the damage boxes didn't work. It was,
But for Michael here, that wasn't actually what happened. I actually believe Cyberpunk on launch was way better than it was received, and even the first reviews were positive. Then it became a cool thing to not like it. We went from hero to zero really fast. That was a tough moment. We didn't know what was happening. We knew that the game is great. Yes, we can improve it. Yes, we need to take time to do it. And we need to rebuild some stuff. That took us a lot of time. But I don't believe we were ever broken. We were always like, let's do this. And it's like, no.
You didn't play the game, did you?
Yeah, either he wasn't there when that happened, and that's just the impression you give. Or he's just being, trying to act like that didn't actually happen. That's not part of this game's story. And it's like, you know, at a certain point, you just have to own it as a thing that, like, that's, you know, why this new expansion's not on those consoles, because we just couldn't push those any further.
Yeah.
That's why we, you know, got the PS5 and Xbox Series X and S versions out there with the free upgrades and all that, because we wanted people to get to, you know, a more stable version of that game. That kind of stuff, you kind of just own it and move on and say, like, hey, you know, this sucked. We, you know, regret doing that, but we've done a lot of work since then to make it a better, more complete experience, that kind of stuff. But yeah, the one thing you don't want to do is tell people that their experiences didn't actually happen.
Yeah.
That they were just memeing against the game.
I will give him one thing, because if you were playing Cyberpunk on PC or, believe it or not, on Stadia, you actually did have a better experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. At least if your PC was good enough.
Yeah.
I want to jump on that topic. I mean, yeah, exactly. Like what Phil said. Like when you think about the people that really didn't experience much of an issue, who were they? They were the people playing on PC. They were the people playing on, crazily enough, Stadia. And they were the people playing on Xbox Series X. But, you know, at that time, who had a current gen console to begin with? Everybody that bought it and excited for it had PS4s and Xbox
ones. Yeah.
So, you know, like,
yeah, you can't just shift the narrative, you know? It's like,
exactly.
These things happened despite the fact that, you know, there were people that did have a good experience. There were many, many more people that did not. You can't just deny that.
This game was hyped for, like, what, 3 to 6 years? And all they showed were, like, high-performance demo builds. Not everybody has high performance. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I even stopped playing the game because I had a point that I couldn't... and I was playing on Series X, mind you. There was a point where I couldn't just get... Like, I had to, like, shoot a helicopter out of the air with a grenade launcher. I actually left the building without a grenade launcher. So I was shooting it with... pistols and my fists. I, you know, I can't shoot a helicopter with my fists, right? So I couldn't beat the game.
Really worked.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, you just can't sit here and try to deny the experiences that that happened. You don't see Sean from Hello Games being like, "Yo, you guys, you know, claim you didn't like No Man's Sky at launch, but that's not really what happened." It was just a lot of shitty people being shitty about it, and it's like, no, plenty of people didn't like it. There's also a lot of people that did like it at launch, the style of game that was at that time.
I mean, and they did it right. I mean, they just put their heads down and got to it and fixed it, you know.
Yeah,
on the positive side, like, as far as I know, they fixed Cyberpunk, right? Like, it's it's all good now.
Basically, yeah.
So, yeah, for the most part.
Good on them for that. But, like, this has to be said. No, absolutely not. And the main thing is, like, you know, everybody looked at CDPR as, like, oh, cool, yeah, they're the next generation. Right? And
yeah.
What your 3 was. And, yeah, Cyberpunk happens, and guess what? You can't trust anybody. So, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Oops.
Cyberpunk's issues are things they could not fix in updates. Just like things that are maybe janky about it in ways that are like, you'd have to just remake the entire game, restart development, but they're not going to do that.
Yeah. It's also a pure example of overpromising. So when people are saying they're overhyping, like, you know, the Cyberpunk hate, I'm like, maybe you shouldn't have overpromised to begin with.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it for the proper stories here. We got a little bit more to talk about here in the Annapurna Interactive Showcase. We're not going to talk about everything that's in here, but we do have some interesting stuff for that. Yeah, we'll go through some of the stuff here. There's Cocoon that's been shown at some of the indie showcases during Summer Game Fest. They finally confirmed a date, September 29th. This will be PS5, Xbox, Switch, and PC. That's a game that looks pretty cool. Yeah, from Jeppe Carlson, lead gameplay designer of Limbo and Inside, is leading this new studio that is working on this game. That looks really cool. For that, so that's one of the games here that got some buzz. Another one here, Lush Foil Photography Sim. It looks really neat. It's kind of an exploration game where you're just taking photographs of the environments and all that kind of stuff. Looks really cool for what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a concept that hasn't been done already, but, you know, it hasn't been overdone, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Africa.
Yeah, I don't think this is going to be as, like, objective-based for it. Yeah. So that's neat. But yeah, they announced that they are publishing this game from developer Matt Newell. Not sure what he has done otherwise, but that's cool. They also announced they were working on or publishing a game coming out of Kyoto, Maru Mitu Games, the studio behind Captain Star 1, tentatively titled Project D. So that's looking neat from the little teaser that they showed for this. That looks neat. There's a lot of developer interview stuff for that, but yeah, it's got some neat stuff there. Let's see. To a T is another notable game. This is Keita Takahashi's new game with his studio Uvula, and it's called To a T. They're partnering with Able Gamers for this game. It's about a character that, 3D narrative adventure game, plays as a teen. With a unique posture, just trying to live a normal life in a small coastal town. The unique posture is that they are always in a T pose. If you know your gaming lingo, so this is a teen that's kind of going around doing their daily stuff, but cannot put their arms down.
That's that would be a very, very difficult disability to deal with.
But yeah, you're just kind of controlling this character, doing their stuff. The different mini games you'll run into throughout your daily life, like trying to eat food and drink water, petting dogs, eating breakfast, all that kind of stuff. Figure out how to do that, but you can explore your town. There's character customization, buying clothes and that kind of stuff to change up your wardrobe, that kind of thing, as well as take care of your cute dog. So that looks cool. That's only on Xbox and PC, as well as Game Pass. So you'll be able to check that out whenever it's done.
Yeah.
Let's see here. This one's looking pretty neat. Ghost Bike. This is from developer Messhoff. Coming to PS5, PS4, Xbox Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC in 2024. That'll also be on Game Pass. It puts players in the shoes of a streetwise kid from Freehub City on a mission to revive the last of the ghost bikes the magical couriers who rode between the world of the living and the world of the dead. You ride the ghost bike to the afterlife and save the lost souls of the wheel world. Abandoned and forgotten, the ghost bike needs repair, bikes need maintenance, and this one is on its last link. Beat ghosts in contest of speed and skill to win back ghost power. Only then can you make the journey to the afterworld and return the true spirit of biking back to wheel world. So it's a very weird premise and story, but looks really cool. For that. So that's one you can check out. I don't think they have a date yet. 2024. Let's see here. There is, action RPG game called We Kill Monsters. PC only, no date for it just yet. But this looks very much like a neat game. Let's see. Yeah, you deal with homunculi in this. Yeah. Kind of hard to describe this one. But yeah, you're trying to go around killing enemies, that kind of stuff, and doing a lot of weird stuff, I guess. Mm. So yeah, that looks neat. Let's see. Also on here, yeah, this one looks neat. Beauty Star, The Morose Tale of Graveyard Clem. This is a 3D action game. They've delayed this. It was supposed to be out this year, but it'll be early 2024. But it'll be on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, as well as Game Pass. It's over-the-shoulder 3D action game where you are playing a woman that is also controlling a big mech. So it's kind of a shell mech kind of thing where you're exposed, but you got guns on the mech as well as your own guns.
Yep.
But along the way, you're also able to do some farming and base building stuff. That looks really neat.
It's got like a real sort of space western vibe to it, and you know, I fucks with that. So yeah. I will definitely be looking at this next year when it comes out.
Yeah. Let's see. They also shut off Stray is coming to Xbox on August 10th. So no Game Pass for that.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Thirsty Suitors is coming to everything, PlayStation, Xbox, Switch, and PC on November 2nd. So that's
another indie that I'm looking forward to seeing just because of how balls to the wall crazy it is.
Yeah, it's from Outer Loop Games, who's made like Falcon Age and some other stuff here. But yeah, it is noteworthy because it is a sort of a relationship game, but dealing with, you know, having an family of Indian parents, you know, dealing with your all the culture stuff that goes around that, of them trying to dictate who you should date and all that.
Yeah.
Turning things into literal like RPG fights against your family and friends and that, as you try and date the person you want and deal with the family's objections to that in some wild ways.
Also, there's a lot of skateboarding as well. That's another thing.
Yeah, that's one of the ways you can get around. So, yeah, kind of like if you mixed Indian culture with like Scott Pilgrim versus the World.
Yeah, pretty much. That's like almost exactly what it is.
Yeah. So, yeah, that'll also be on Game Pass. So that's one you can check out. And they ended on the first internal game that Annapurna Interactive has ever announced, Blade Runner 2033 Labyrinth. Consoles and PC, no date yet, but just kind of a teaser, sort of the first Blade Runner game in the last 25 years.
Yeah. I mean, there was the remaster of the original that happened a while back, but
yeah,
I think that might have gotten people interested in having something new. So this is going to be something new, but what it is, we don't know.
Yeah, I assume based on the type of game that Annapurna Interactive makes, it'll probably be more of a narrative adventure kind of game, maybe with some action in there. Who knows?
Yeah.
Probably at least lots of talking, because that's what those movies have been about. But yeah, that's neat. And that'll largely do it. There's links to everything that was shown off if you want to look at trailers and whatnot that they showed off. So that's worth checking out. But yeah, that's going to do it for the show this week.
Yep.
Thank you to Brandon, Danreb, and Filippo for joining this week.
No problem.
Always.
We'll be back next week with a new slate of news for you to check out and for us to talk about. And, you know, if you enjoy the show, if you're to let friends and family know, they should check it out. And select strangers that will also check out the weird biking game or Thirsty Suitors, that kind of stuff. Because those are cool looking games for people to be looking forward to. So, yeah. Definitely check that stuff out. And
yeah,
thank you all for tuning in. Hope you have a good week ahead, and we'll see you all next time. Have a good one.